Hey, it's Dan Melnick. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Zing, and I'm proud to be a sponsor of this podcast. So please check us out today as we can help fuel your business growth. MyZing.io. Thank you.
Rachel, thank you for being on my show again.
Thanks for having me. Here's the thing. I thought I'd probably never get back on your podcast because I'm such small potatoes. And you're talking to business tycoons, you're talking to people from NASA, and I'm just like a weird farm girl with my fantasy books. So it's nice to be back.
So thanks again for giving me opportunity to present you and your work to my audience. So I can able to understand that you have a book coming up that is going to release.
Yeah, we've got right here is A Dance of Mist and Fury, which is a fantasy romance. It's like, I want to say it's been pretty much my entire life work because it kind of started from being a small child going to the movie theater in 1998. For a Disney movie called Mulan. And from there, I just wanted more of this character. And someone made the mistake of telling me that, you know, there is a place called China and there is a Great Wall. And I just started devouring history books. So, like, I do have a lot of history just in my noggin and folklore and mythology. And I got frustrated with how a lot of romance and fantasy is being told because it's usually just people who are just mean to each other. And I got upset to the point where I was like, I'm just going to write my own. And that's kind of where it started off. Because I pitched the idea of when I started writing it, Beauty and the Beast retellings were still really popular and they're still kind of popular going on right now. I had the idea of, what if the main character was not conventionally pretty? And what if the beast wasn't looking to remove his curse? What if he has the curse for a reason and is off doing things and doesn't want to be broken? And people that I talked to with this concept, they really liked the idea. And I just thought, okay, I can do this. Like, my brain thought of the premise, we can do this, we can work it out. And I thought to myself, you know, we're going to make a short novella. It's going to be a really short book, easy peasy. And then it got longer and longer because there's subplots and context and world building that's going on. And I kind of just fell in love with writing it. And it became a book that by the end of it, reading it cover to cover is, the idea I want to present is that when you start off with it to when you finish it, I want people who read it to feel like, yes, there is true love in the world. And you don't have to be someone special for it. You don't have to be a soldier or a queen or a sorceress or whatever. You can just be a person who finds true love. So that's... That's where it went. And one of the things is that, I don't want to say this, because in real life, I am a hopeless romantic. I love being romantic to the people that I'm dating. Like whoever I'm with is, I want to be romantic to them for them to be romantic to me back. Like just utterly hopeless romantic. I don't know how that translates into fiction because for the longest time, I thought I don't like romances because they're always on a level 10 for drama in fiction. And I didn't know how writing a softer kind of romance where there's trying to give this push and pull, this tug, this dance of trying to figure out how to express love and how to receive love, if that was going to be taken very well. So absolutely, 100% is people who were giving me feedback and telling me how they enjoyed these small scenes of just the characters being sweet to each other, trying to be good to each other was, first of all, it warmed my heart. Because I worked very hard on that. And it was very encouraging to see that that's also still something that people have an interest in. Like it doesn't have to always be we're fighting to save the kingdom and we're reluctant allies. And, like it's okay that it's a very cozy setting and it's a very long draw for them to realize they have feelings for each other and to try and express their feelings for each other. So like I was really, really worried that my real life idea of romance just would not translate well. So having people talk about when they took a moment to just like read it and they would like share it with a group for them to talk about how they like this romance. They like these little quiet, intimate scenes that are going on there and how they like how the prose is it's very melodic. Like thank you. Made it with my brain.
So before talking more about your work, can you please introduce yourself to my new audience for watching
Oh,
this interview?
sorry. I got caught up with talking about the thing. I'm really terrible at talking about myself. I will talk about you and all my cool friends from dawn to dusk. I forget to talk about myself. But where do I start? Who am I?
I mean, your
What's
name
wrong?
and what you do.
Yeah, it's just well, I came here from the Caribbean and now I live in California. And my mom was born in the Caribbean, my dad is a Marine. And hard to talk about myself because I'm just like like, who am I? Am I even interesting? I don't know. The interesting part, I'm on a farm. That tends to be the interesting thing is I'm on a farm and for a while, I was trying to like kind of fit into societal expectations and family expectations, working in the medical field, working as a teacher. I'm a substitute teacher now. But first and foremost is, trying to get the ranch in order, trying to help my community in any way I can with volunteer work. And then writing my silly little fantasy books that I am very, very invested in. Like they're a nice escape, you know?
And the previous book that you have wrote.
Right. When I first talked to you is we had finished these two and then this one was coming out. And we've since got the audiobook for that one done too. So Travis Sivart, and I've told Travis he should talk to you because that man is just he's a creation machine with his audiobooks, his gameplay, his writing. Like he's got worlds swimming around his head. I'm like, I know someone you gotta talk to. Like you gotta share. But like me and like most writers, he's a shy guy. Like he presents as like a grumpy old man, but he's a sweetheart. And working with him to make the audiobook has been an absolute joy because the deal was when I asked him if he would take the job, the deal was that he would do it if he liked the book. So I sent him a digital copy. I'm like, all right, take your time, read it. And meanwhile, I'm sweating bullets over here. But he comes back to me a week later and he goes, all right, I'll draw up a contract. I'm like, oh, he must really like it. And he asked, could I put it onto my live stream because that's part of how I make my living when I'm doing recordings, so I have it live. And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever makes you comfortable, all that. Which also gave me a chance to kind of snoop on him. Because I'm like, okay, I kind of just want to see like, what he's got going on. And he asked me if I had any like particulars for voices. I said, if you really like it, just go for it 100%, whatever you want to interpret. Which was fun because watching him in the recording booth, just having a grand old time. Like, it made my heart happy because, again, it's something I worked really hard on. And to see someone enjoying it so much as they're voicing everything was so encouraging. And he's got such a range of voice for someone who presents the grumpy old man. And he's got this range and he puts his heart into everything because he's just enjoying himself with the story. And it was great. I love working with him.
And what is love languages?
Look, man. People tend to forget that I do have degrees in psychology and social behavioral studies, but like it doesn't matter unless you have a doctorate. So I just have fancy pieces of paper that say I kind of know stuff. And love languages was another reason why I was just very upset with a lot of fantasy romance books, is that it seemed like, how do I want to say it? It was very much that when a character is presenting, like the main love interest is presenting the character with fanciful gifts, and that's like a shortcut for they're in a romance now. And I don't like that. Because coming from a background that's very poor is I'm not accustomed to receiving gifts, so it feels odd for me. It's not my love language. And I was so frustrated with seeing that this is just a thing repeated, and it felt so lazy to me. And I was like, you know what? I studied this stuff. Let me use it. Let me go through it. So that was one of the things when writing a romance for a dance was, what are the characters' love languages going to be, and the characters around them, because they're not instantly together. There's a huge chunk where they are together, and they're just trying to like be a good couple and trying to figure out how to express love to each other, which was fun and frustrating. So I had to figure out what are their primary and secondary love languages going to be. Are they going to be the kind of person that they feel loved when they're receiving gifts? Not for me. Are they going to be the kind of person that they feel loved when someone is verbally validating and encouraging them? Are they going to be the kind of person who feels loved when someone decides that, you know, they're going to do this thing for them, like, you know, I'm frustrated trying to build this jungle gym, whatever it is, this tree house. Like, oh, I'll do it for you. Is that how they feel loved? Do they feel loved spending time together? Do they feel loved just like holding hands? And it seemed like, again, it was so frustrating. It was so frustrating that the shortcut to a lot of these romances was he gave her a bunch of fancy gifts and told her she's pretty. I'm like, that seems cheap. Because my love language is touch. Like, I need you here where I can hug you. Then my secondary love language, this is too much about me. My secondary love language is quality time. So, like, I need you here where I can hug you. But I very, very rarely see it in novels that it's the characters spending time together. And I love that. Like, I love just watching these two characters be together and be cute together. Like, if that is the entire premise, I will pay all my money to have it. Like, that's what I want. I don't want any of this world-ending nonsense. Just be good to each other and be cute together. That's it. So that's why I spent 900 pages writing was two people who are from very different classes, that we have someone who is in the peasantry class and someone who's in the nobility class, that they're trying to understand each other. Then they realize they have feelings and they're trying to express their feelings in the way that the other one feels comfortable. Like they're just trying to be good to each other. I'm like, yes. Because I have such a hard time finding that. I found it recently. Where is the book? It's right here. Let me see if I can slide this out without dropping anything. I found it recently in this one too, that the romance in here is just two people just trying to work together, and they're just trying to be good to each other. And I was like, okay, Elizabeth Lim, you can emotionally destroy me any day of the week because you have my heart. Like, this was a delight. If I knew this existed, I probably wouldn't have written that. Because that's that's what I want. I just want characters who are nice to each other to like end up together. That's it. That's all I want.
Oh, it's a fictional story, and can I say this is your personal expression of love?
It is, and it's because there are various characters in there that they express their love in very different ways. When our main love interest, Kwan, realizes that gift giving is something that's going to make Hisa uncomfortable. Like he quits cold turkey and like tries to figure out like how do I, because typically in his, like in the noble society is when you're courting someone, is there's a lot of poetry to it, but she doesn't understand poetry. She's like, just, I don't understand what you're trying to tell me. And there's like a lot of like tokens of affection that are like, it's a lot of subtlety and like, metaphor that's going around, but she doesn't understand it. So he's trying to figure out how to express himself in a way that she's comfortable with it. And she's trying to express herself in a way that he's comfortable with it and he understands. So they do go through various love languages, trying to figure out just like how to be good to each other. And then there's other characters in there that, for one reason or another, they either get involved and just trying to like mess things up. It's like, this is hilarious. Like, this is the best show. Let's mess with it a little bit. Or that they do have they have genuine relationships in their own circle, or relationships that are very jealous and they're more of like there for convenience or because it was necessary for whatever kind of alliance is going on. So there's a lot of lovelessness that is between several couples in the book. That you have couples that they're married for the sake of convenience. They're married because this was what was best for the family. And so they're very not interested in romance and they're very frustrated with their lives. And then we juxtapose that with how other people are perceiving that. Like for the peasantry in this world that I've created, it made more sense to me that you wouldn't get married very early because at that point you're basically children who are having children and a poor farming society can't support that. So it'd make more sense to just wait. Whereas opposed to nobility, the faster you can get married and like, hold down these alliances, the better it is for us. But when you're a peasant, you'll have alliances. So like that doesn't matter. And it's just supposed with, the servantry class, like the servants, and how they see it as very transactional, that, sex and romance is more to secure a position of comfort. Like they're not worried about whether they're in love or not. They're worried about if this is going to benefit them and their family. So there's very different perceptions of what's going on, and there's very different uses of love languages that go through. Because you can have someone who is utilizing gift giving, they're utilizing words of affirmation, they're using touch, but it's very transactional. And then you have on the other side people who are trying to express themselves the way that they feel most comfortable, and they don't understand why it's not being received that way. So there's a lot of characters trying to they're trying to sort out their emotions, and it's just the clunkiest way possible.
And how much time you took to create these characters and put this imagination in the form of words and put it in a physical book?
It's going to sound weird when I say this, but for 265,000 words, it took me about 4 months to get that first draft done. But in those 4 months, I was working on it about 6 hours a day, sometimes as long as 12 hours a day. Like it started in May where I was just like, I had more time and the weather was warmer. So I have to get up early to take care of the animals anyway on the farm. So I'm getting up at 5 a.m. anyway. So I come back in and like clean up, just like sit down and write some more. And I just got very, very lucky that the summer was not as hot, so I didn't have to go out and take care of my animals like as much and worry about them as much. I wasn't getting heat sick because I wasn't out there quite so much as I typically would be. And my nonprofit work just didn't need me. I had summer vacation, so I didn't have to do any substitute teaching. Like the stars aligned so that I could get that first draft out quickly. And again, I thought that this was going to be a very short book, and it turned out to be a very large book. If we take just comparing and contrasting what my first novel was compared to what this is, it's very thick. It's big. And so it seems like it should have taken me longer, but I was so invested in what was going on. And as I'm out with the animals, I start like it just kept following me. I had to schedule days where I just like wasn't working on it, but even then I still spent a couple hours just working on it. But I had to actually schedule days to like have myself just leave so that I just wasn't staring at a computer all day, every day for the entire summer. But even then, just like I would walk around on a hiking trail or go to a zoo, and there'd just be something in the back of my mind. It's like, hey, you know what? We had this subplot going on. What if it led to this? And I was like, that's a fantastic idea. Hopefully I can remember. So it sounds weird to say that in 4 months I wrote 900 pages. But like I had so much time just in the summer days, and it was just always on my mind.
And do you think these characters will be in the real world, and how it will be if it is?
If the characters were in the real world, oh God. A lot of them are kind of a mess because the world that I built for them is a feudal era East Asia inspired world. And if you know anything about like the Romance of the Three Kingdoms and the shogunates and like, it was kind of a mess. Like people really did not know how to sort themselves out and were just trying to make do with like the hand that they were dealt. But something that really, really helped in novel form was the Tale of Genji. And as a nod to that is a very last minute decision character. I had named him Genji, and he turned out to be my favorite character because he is like this kind of character that is supposed to be acting as a mentor and a friend to Quan, who is our main love interest. And because I wanted to subvert as many tropes as I hated as possible. And I always really hated that either our main love interest is, the eldest or the youngest. I'm like, I'm just gonna put him somewhere in between. I always hated that, like, he's always like the most powerful, when you're dealing with like fairies and demigods, like they're always like, oh yeah, like he's like the strongest. No, there is someone stronger than him, someone who is wiser and who is actually kind of like a good person, who's richer, more powerful, all this stuff. And like they're buds, they're fine with each other. So, because typically in fantasies, if that happens, the other guy is always the villain. And I'm like, nah, let's have them be friends. And you know what would be hilarious? What if this guy who is Quan's mentor, who is more powerful, richer, has like this legacy. What if he was just like a wallflower? Like, what if he was just really, really shy? And the way that he kind of just interacts with the main couple and try, like, he sees that they like each other and he wants to encourage it without like being involved and messing with their lives. And the amount of wisdom that he just talks about. I'm like, where did I think of that? That seems a little bit too smart to come from me, but he became my favorite character in that way. One of the things that is in his dialogue is that love isn't something that's won. Like love isn't an object. Love is a reward for taking a risk and for putting effort into it. Like for two people to put effort into a relationship, that's love. I'm like, man, it's my favorite character. I was going to kill him, but he's my favorite character now. And I can't.
So love, can I say you have understood everything about it and you're putting it in different forms and you have said love has different languages and can be expressed in different forms.
Yeah. 'Cause, but it's like I was saying, is that, you can have love be received in like giving or receiving gifts, in giving encouragement or receiving encouragement, in spending time together, and just like having the person physically there to just hold and that sort of thing. I'm missing one. I always miss one at the very end. So we have gift giving, words of affirmation, acts of service is the other one. And one of the actual perks of being a wallflower is that people just tend to forget that you're there doing your own thing. And they'll just talk to each other. And there's a lot of conversations I have. I stop on doing and I'm like, okay, this is far more fascinating. And so, like, I've had the chance to just watch people fall in and out of love and try and figure it out until they get it right. And then trying to write a romance from a male perspective, I am very not equipped to write love from a man's perspective. So what I ended up doing is I ended up doing, field research, which is just the very fancy academic term for I went out into public and asked strangers very awkward questions. I went into town to gather data. We're going to call it gathering data, which was asking men what they like about their partner and how they like express that to their partner. And after all the awkwardness goes away and I've explained, no, I'm a writer and I'm trying to write a male character. If I could manage it, what I tried to do was like approach a group of men so I could just have like a bigger sample than going individually, which it took a lot longer for them to be comfortable because like they're in front of their friends. But once they got comfortable and realized I'm just an awkward writer and I am just genuinely asking questions and we're probably never going to see each other again. Let's be real. Like it became fun. Like they were able to bounce off each other. I had my notepad just like jotting things down. And strangely enough, I don't know if this is universal, but strangely enough, one of the things that kept coming up was that they really, really like trying to do things and having things like just kind of done for them that seems very thoughtful. And the number one word they used was not beautiful, was not sex. The number one word used, because at some point I noticed it, I kept a tally in the corner. Because like I'm there doing research. Out in the wild, the number one word used was cute. And it was never in how their partner looked. It was always in something that their partner was doing, which I thought was very interesting because I like am woman, think like man, do be gooder. I don't know how to think like a man. So like having all this information, having guys actually try and explain it was very helpful. It was very eye-opening. It was awkward, and I'm pretty sure we left each other, just parted ways, thinking this was the strangest day in my life. But it helped.
And what exactly that you want to say with this book?
This book is a love letter, absolutely. Not just in its themes, because it is a romance. And it's not just a love letter like to, oh shoot, I'm dropping stuff. It's not just a love letter like, two love languages and two romance, but two people who adore fantasy, but they have some complaints. And I thought to myself, I could do that. And, top among them. It is a love letter to like the Disney that was in the 90s and to Studio Ghibli, because I think those two in particular taught me more about how it's okay to just be a little different and it's okay to keep trying. Like one of the things I've said, and like it once I was able to say it, a lot of people kind of agreed with it, which like it made me feel better. But I get the sense with Studio Ghibli, and particularly the works that Miyazaki himself works on, is that the lesson is life is hard. Like it's really hard. But at the end, things are going to be okay. And I try really hard to like put that into here. Life is hard, but it's going to be okay. I think that's the greatest comfort that we can have, especially with today's times. Like there's so much going on in the world, and just I'll get like news clips from everywhere talking about how, depression is going up among, the population of this country, or loneliness is going up, or like, and I think more than ever, we need to feel comfort. I think we need to be reminded like life is hard, but it's going to be okay. Like you are going to be okay. And we need to believe, I think, that true love is out there. Like it absolutely exists. But the world has become so cynical, I think it's tried to beat that belief out of us. So again, like the message I want from here, from people who read it start to finish, is for them to remember to believe that yes, true love does exist. And like anyone can find it if you're looking for it.
You're giving them the hope.
Well, that is the goal. We'll see if it makes it. Like there's only so much I can actually do. The rest of it has to be on the other person to kind of like take it in and really find it in themselves. 'Cause you could tell someone that, that they're a great chef. And they could be like, "Oh no, I suck 'cause I'm comparing myself to so and so from Le Cordon Bleu." I don't know. I don't know chef stuff. This is a bad metaphor. But you get the idea is that you can encourage them the whole way, but they need that last chunk for themselves to kind of like take it and be like, "I am good at this. I will do that." And that's why I like to brag about my friends so much, because I want to be surrounded by people who are very passionate about things that they are doing. Like, there's so many people out there that they don't chase their passion because they're afraid of it. They're afraid to chase their passion. Like, no. Do it. Go for it. Find true love. Start a business. Make cakes. I don't know. Start a podcast and talk to people from around the world and be like, super successful. I told you within 5 years, I think. And it was a year that you became really successful. Like, I see, see, but you already had it in you, I think. 'Cause you are a very warm person and you already had it in you that you had that confidence going in. So that's what I want to do with the stories that I give is to remind people you have that confidence. You just need to remember that you have it. Just go for it. That thing you want to do that thing you want to do, so long as it's not illegal.
And where this inspiration is coming for you to collect all this information and put it in a form of story and tell it to people who are not connected to you?
I mean, like again, a lot of it came from just being a really, really shy kid and not really fitting in. But there were these movies like from Studio Ghibli, from Disney. There were these stories that I was told. And it made me feel like, no, and like it's okay. Yes, I can make friends with woodland creatures. I will pet that bear. Unbridled confidence is what you need sometimes. And that's kind of just what I want to put back in there to kind of just remind people. And that's why I write for adults. Like I think of all people, once you get to an age where you've just been beat down by life and you kind of forget to believe in magic. Like, just believe in magic. Just so it does come from people not believing in magic and trying to convince me that it doesn't exist. It does come from being a person who's very shy and who's very lonely, that I often forgot to just look inward. So, like, there's no way that I'm the only person who forgot. There's no way. And if I can give something to someone to just like let them escape for a little while, to just remind them that you have a passion, you just go for it. That's the greatest thing. I got swoony a little while ago. It was a few months back. Maybe it was a year ago. I had people who were sending me messages that was like, "Oh, hey, I got your first book, your Let There Be Fire." And I just want to say that it got me back into reading. And I was like, "Oh, that's so lovely! Like that's really nice." And they went on to talk about it, and I was like, "One likes my work. Like someone got that thing from my work." And that like it made my heart happy. In particular, most notably, Jubalina, who does all my cover art, is I had sent her the first three books as like a nice thank you because she did the covers I wanted her. And I thought for sure she was just going to leave them on her coffee table as a nice little conversation piece. She started to read them. Remembered, oh yeah, I like reading. And now she's a voracious reader. She's got a library card. On her art stream, she sets aside time to talk about her reading endeavors. And it's been a wild ride, and I didn't realize that there are other people that they thought about reading again. They thought about just like doing a thing they like. And they don't remember why they stopped doing it, either because they didn't have time or felt like they should be doing something else. But just sharing it. And then she shares her passion for it, like that she's now really passionate, loves reading stories. And it went to other people like, yeah, that's right. You know, these are great. So like you don't need to be Brandon Sanderson. You just need one person to be really excited. And I think that's kind of just the greatest gift is someone loved your work so much that it reminded them that they have a passion for something. You know this. You know this.
I have a question. So have you ever thought that you're writing this fiction book, non-reality thing, when you have that imagination about love? Have you ever create thought that why we as a human beings, or you as a human being, this is created, this emotion called love has been created, and why this has this much positive energy, and this gives other person to feel very good, and which you are portraying in your two characters, that you want these characters to be even in reality. Have you ever thought why this emotion is there?
You know, with a lot of my characters, I want them to feel human. Whether or not they're a human or an elf or an ogre or a dog, just something in them that we all in our heart we understand, even if we don't have the words for it. But somewhere in our feelings, just as humans, we feel things, and being able to connect based on that feeling is what I've always tried to do. So even if it's, you know, some guy who has teamed up for revenge realizes, wow, this was bigger than I thought it was. Also, that building's on fire now. Like he still has feelings. And there's parts that get emotional. There's parts that I try to think of what the natural progression would be with them. to continue to make them feel like they would be someone that you know. You could look at a character and be like, oh yeah, that reminds me of my best friend Claire, or like my cousin Benjamin. I don't know. I'm trying to think of names on the fly. That's always been my goal, is to try and write them like, yeah, they're going to do some stuff. Sometimes it's some really cool stuff, but the main core of every character is something that makes them feel tangible and human. Something that, again, like you don't have to have the words for it, but you understand where they're coming from and why they're doing things where they're doing it.
How you are able to be this effective in expressing what you feel?
You know, for real life, I was for a very long time not good at that. Because again, I was a very, very shy kid. And there came a time where I was just very frustrated with myself. And I was like, okay, you know what? I need to learn like how to effectively talk to people. So I would go on to Google and YouTube and try and find people who are smarter than me and who are more successful than me, and like try and take in like their lectures and their lessons, and like figure out what is useful and what I can use, and just try and practice it. There was someone, and I forget who it is, but they were smarter than me, and that's why I remember what they said. Is a good relationship is saying, I don't know what I'm doing. You don't know what the heck you're doing, but maybe together we can figure something out. And I was like, that's actually a really good way to look at it. It's like, you're not looking for someone to solve your problems. You're looking for a teammate in life. Someone else, I don't remember. Here's the thing. I will never remember their names. I will always remember what they say. But someone else had said, the reason why someone is rich and successful at what they do is not because they hate their job. They love their job, and that's what drives them to be successful. And I was like, that makes a whole lot of sense. Like, I've never met someone who hates their job and is also very successful. That's a good point. So, like, that's where that's come from, is listening to people who seem like they've got something, like they've got wisdom or success, or they're just flat out smarter than I am. Like maybe they take scraps and build robots on the weekend. Like they know stuff. I should listen to them and just try and figure out like where can I apply what they've told me.
But with your words, I can understand you have deep understanding about your imagination, and you have expressed it in your upcoming book.
I mean, I try to. And it's like I said, is that this was inspired by a feudal era Sino-Asia setting. And the reason for that is because, again, when I was a little girl who went to go see Mulan, and someone told me, oh, you know, there is a place called China and there is a Great Wall. And I'm like, I need to know everything about it. It's where it started. So I started noticing that, like, hey, in all these different areas, like you have a lot of overlap. In folklore, you have a lot of overlap in culture and some words and architecture. What if I just took all the cool stuff that I really, really like, and like, you know, maybe one or two things I don't like for flavor, and I just made a whole other thing that could have existed. It doesn't, but maybe it could have. Just so that's where it comes in, is this love of folklore, this love of mythology, and this love of history and just culture. Someone had teased me because I didn't know something that happened like 200 years ago. And they're like, I thought you were a history nerd. I had to clarify that if it's newer than 400 years old, I probably don't know it. Because the further back in time something is, like, the cooler it was. Because, like, you know, did it happen? Was it a myth? Maybe both. Who knows? But like, it's fun to think about, and we learn so much like every day as we're like unearthing more and more things that happen. Because the sad part was is that at some point, that way of life was so normal no one thought to write stuff down and just record it. It was just so normal. No one thought, like, it's not going to change. It's not going anywhere. And now we don't know about it and we have to rediscover it, which to me is so fascinating. I was like, I didn't know we could do that. How long have we known that we could do this? Did you know we could do that?
So most of the readers or you know, people who are into communication, not much into having that emotion, reading, mm-hmm. and without seeing the characters physically, they can't be able to, you know, feel that emotion. So how you are being good in creating that emotion without showing them who they are, how they look, just with the words, how you are able to make them come into your world?
It is a struggle, because if I was able to animate, well, I probably need a team for that one. There's only so much you can do as one woman. But I think that's why my books take so long, and like why they're just lengthy, is it's a lot of the characters trying to like mull over what's happened. They're trying to digest what's going on around them, how they feel, how they think, and like trying to understand other people. So there's a lot of internalization that goes on, which is about as close as I can do. And then just give cues of saying, you know, how, you know, this character's face went from like scowling to like maybe like slowly kind of reeling back, and they breathe in deep and just, and you get the idea that they're trying to like to stop being angry. Like, you get the idea, all right, they're upset, but they're like, they're trying to work through it as it goes through. So I'm trying to think of how to say it. Like, I wasn't so interested in pointing out things that I thought really didn't matter. There's a lot of times where someone is trying to set the scene, and what they'll do is they'll try and describe, like, you know, all these nobles, what they're wearing, or, you know, describing all this seating arrangement, the furniture. That doesn't matter to me. I don't care. You know, what does matter is, how is this character who's navigating it, how do they feel? Do they feel like they're underdressed, overdressed? What is the food like? Because you can learn a lot about food. Also, maybe I'm just really hungry every time I'm writing. But, like, beside the point, you have a lot that goes through culture with that sort of thing. You know, what are they eating? What is the music that's being played? If there even is music, what kind of smell is going on? What kind of sounds are there? What is like the textural feeling that's going through? Does it feel cold in the room? Like, you know, it's summer, but it feels like really cold in this room. Is it just the character feeling that, or is it just like actually legitimately cold? Maybe it's that they feel unwanted. So it's going through all of that to try and like give a sense of place, but also for what the character is doing. I think I've said it well, hopefully.
Yeah, you did. So when you're going to release this?
When am I what?
When you're going to release this book.
When is the book releasing? It is releasing on May 3rd. So not too far away. I was actually very surprised because I had someone with me doing it. I put up a Kickstarter thinking, you know, I'm going to have to just work this through. We're going to limp to the end. But no, like very quickly, people had an interest in the idea of it and the setting of it. And I don't know if they could feel like how excited I was to just share this, but maybe, because it did pretty well. It did pretty well. And I was all excited for it. And sorry, reminiscing for a second. And that was in December that we did it. I keep saying we like someone there, which I was told, don't do that in December. Like, don't do a crowdfunding anything in December. But after I got it like kind of complete, I was still editing, sending it to my editor, who at the time was not feeling very well. I was like, you know what, we'll just do it. Like, we'll just see. We'll just see. So it was really encouraging that, you know, probably the worst time. And then I had people who I thought were my friends telling me it's not going to sell. It's not good. And I was like, oh, that breaks my heart. And then to have complete strangers come back to me and be like, okay, I read this piece that you sent. I read like the whole 30 pages that you gave me. Fantastic. Chef's kiss. Very pretty. I love this character you're doing, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, so these guys are telling me don't do it, but these complete strangers who owe me nothing are really into it. Okay, there's something here. So yeah, start, I think May 3rd. No, it was a little bit further into May. It might have been like in the middle of May is when I first started writing it. So almost a year complete from putting the first words down to it being released into the public.
Awesome. In very few days it is going to be out. I wish
Yeah.
the best for you, and I want it to reach everywhere in the world
Yeah.
and learn from
I'm
you.
trying to
And
get it. I'm trying to get it more and more places. Just anytime there's a new offer to, hey, do you want it to go onto this platform? Yes, that is a great idea. Let's get like just have it as accessible as possible.
are you going to put this on audiobook?
You know what? If there is an interest in having the audiobook, I will find someone and work something out.
Nice.
Yeah.
And at last, as usual, what is your observation about my work?
About your world?
My work.
Oh, your work. I was gonna be like, your world, man. Your world is huge. It's just growing every. But your work is the same thing. Like, and I told you last time that I was here is I first met you on Instagram when you had like less than 100 people. And I was like, yeah, this guy seems like he's like really passionate. He's like, yeah, okay, let's go for it. Let's go. And I told you, people can sense that you are warm. You lend yourself to being very open. And I told you that. You know, at the time you said that you were like, you know, in the top 10 or something for podcasts. And I was like, no, in 5 years, number one, super success. It's been what, a year? I told you. That's the only time I will ever tell friends I told you is when it's something wonderful.
Yeah, after you saying that, you know, in recent times and also in past few months, I got a lot of companies approaching me to work with me and to collaborate with me. And I never thought that that will happen. But when I thought that, I immediately messaged you, like, this is what
Yeah.
happened to me. You said,
But
right, like your observation was correct.
I knew it because you had such a passion for wanting this to work. And that's who I want to surround myself with is people who are so passionate about making something that they have no choice but to make it successful. Like I feed off of that. Like that is so one. We need more of that just in the world. It's just someone who wants to connect to people, someone who wants to make things. And by God, they're going to do it, whatever it takes. And like, see?
I'm as intense as the characters that you write in your book about love.
Oh, I can make a prediction for you about love right now. We're gonna throw out into the universe. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna predict, we're gonna put it on an even bigger crunch time. So last time I said within 5 years. This time I'm gonna say inside of 3 years, you're going to find someone who is charming and sweet and who, when you take the time for an interview at like 2 a.m. they're gonna get up with you so that while you're taking a shower, they're making coffee and they're making sure that everything is charged. They're going to be someone who is with you and is your teammate and is going to take care of you. throwing that into the universe. 3 years. Come back to me when it happens in 6 months.
I'll put this clip everywhere on the social media and everywhere.
And when it does happen, I'm like, damn, next time I talk to Sai, I need to like just throw out lottery numbers and then just like use them.
So, do you have your own place where you have, you know, where people can able to buy your book and get it?
I do, because you were telling me that I need my own website. And what I didn't know is that I actually was given a website on Books to Read. So I found out, I was like, I should tell Sai. He's busy talking to someone from NASA. Never mind. But no, if you go onto Books to Read /RA Morley, all of my stuff is right there. So you'll see everything that I've made that's in print and ebook, anything that's coming up, it will be there first. So, like, because I know that with Amazon, I thought it was just me not knowing how Amazon worked because I'm me. Hi. But apparently with a lot of other self-published authors, particularly if you are not exclusive to Amazon, is they will hide your pre-order. And I was like, oh, that's not nice. So if you want anything pre-ordered, if you want to see like what's coming up next, it will be on Books to Read /RA Morley first. Like it'll be right up there from the moment I even think about it.
I'll put the link on the screen also on the in the description also in my website as well. People who finds it anywhere in the internet can able to see the work that you're doing, can able to feel the energy and the emotion that you are expressing through your characters.
Okay. I am trying. Like with every try, I get a little bit better. And with every try I realize, you know what? People do like things that I'm doing. And I just get excited to talk about it rather than, you know, continuing to be like very shy about it.
I'm sure your work reaches everywhere in the world, and I'm sure you'll get a lot of observations about your expression.
Well, I hope so.
Can I put this video on my YouTube channel with your permission?
Yeah, always.
And also,
you think I'm going to tell my friend Sai? No. No, you can't put up our interview on YouTube. Put up whatever you like.
Yeah, that's my next question. Like, can I put this audio and video clip on my podcast, website, internet, social media, everywhere with your permission?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to just talk to me just for the sake of talking to me, you can do that too. But if you want to talk to me in public, like, you're not ashamed to talk to me in public, right?
Sure, I'll share it everywhere, and I hope all my audience can able to see your books and can able to feel the feeling that you're feeling.
Yeah. Well, I hope that, you know, you have a fiercely loyal audience who's very interested in just the world they're on, making connections to. Like, that is your audience, is other people who want to connect to the world. And I do hope that if they do take the time with any of my books, that they're going to get that sense of feeling like there is someone out there who understands what I'm feeling, even though we've never met. Because that, like, that's the feeling I got from stories growing up, is somewhere out there, someone understands how I feel, even though we've never met. So that's what I want to pass on to your audience. And
oh, yeah, most of my audience and also the guests that that are coming next are the world leaders, actually being in you know, leadership positions and making the globe better. So what do you say to them? You know, they are changing the world and they're making things happen.
To world leaders is, please be patient. Not all of us are on your level. And not all of us communicate the same way. But by the end of the day, we are all humans on this planet. And like, that's awesome that we're all here able to share a giant rock in space. So world leaders, like, be patient. I understand you want to fix the world. You want to fix it right now. You see a problem, you have capital to try and solve it. It's okay to go slow. It's okay to take your time. It's okay to listen to other sources. It's like, it's okay to share. And I know that when your heart is in the right place, you're going to do wonderful things.
I hear you.
And hopefully.
And I will say this observation, your words, that you're going to say next. I want your observation about, like, you know, me. I'm actually a software engineer, a DevOps engineer. I'm working for a UK company. That's my full-time role. Apart from that, I'm interviewing experts like you around the world. From
experts. Yeah. It's a little too strong of a word. I'm just the farm girl sharing stories and trying to make people realize that it's okay to be passionate. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to love. I wouldn't call it expert.
Being in different industries who are trying to spread some energy with their work, can be in any positions, in any level, from any industry, from any place. I'm trying to explore and trying to interact and communicate and trying to know from their experiences and trying to understand their problem-solving ability and how they are able to make things happen, trying to see world in every which way. So what I'm going to learn with these interactions and this global communication and how it is going to be contributing to my career and also me as human being.
Yeah.
How it is going to be impact me and my people who will be watching and listening to my podcast.
Yeah, but Sai, you impact every day because only you, only you could go and find like a farmer out in somewhere in like some flyover state. And then also like the biggest CEO in the UK, and then someone from NASA and a nuclear engineer and a self-published writer. And you could be like, you know what? Not so different. And I'm going to show it. Like only you could be able to do that. Because that's how you lend yourself. You lend yourself to just being like, hey, we have to have something in common. That's how you present, is regardless of where we are, who we are, what we look like, what our profession is, we have to have something in common. Even if it's just we're both humans on this planet. Like that's how you present yourself. And that's, I honestly think that's how you make such great connections, because you go in, and I might be wrong, so correct me if I am wrong. But I think you go in so sure that you and whoever you are talking to have to have something, anything in common. Did I get it?
Okay, yeah. Because we all human beings, no matter which part we live. But that's the common thing. And your observation is extremely valuable for me more than any of my guests, because you are seeing me from long time now, more than 750 or 760 interviews I have done, and you are following me from like many hundreds of interviews ago. You are seeing me, so that's why your words about me and your observation means a lot to me.
Well, I told you before, from the time you had less than 100 people following you, I was like, no, he seems pretty passionate. I think he's going to do it.
I'm making a lot of money with this. But I was not doing for, you know, doing for money, but doing something good and creating some positive effect in the world, you know, given me all these things. But all these are external things. Even if I don't get it, I will do this.
Yeah. But that, like, that's the heart of it. That's the whole passion of it, is that, like how you said, is how you went in. Even if I wasn't making a lot of money, I still want to do this. And that, I think that's why you're successful. I think that's it. Because that's how it goes, is saying this is going to succeed regardless of money. And that's the heart and the passion. And there's so many people who are afraid of that. And I understand why there's a fear, because there are responsibilities, there's bills, families, groceries, and you do need finances for that. And it's understandable. And it does kind of take away from being able to chase that passion. So when I saw you and I was like, okay, he's just going for it, full throttle. Let's go.
I'll publish this video and I'll let you know. And I hope it reaches to many people. And I hope your book, impacts a lot of people and get a good message from it, no matter like from which country they read it.
Yeah. But I mean, the same way that warmth that you give is universal. I'm really, really hoping that I can express that love is also universal. It's just a different kind of warmth.
Thank you very much, Molly. You're a very special guest for me. I want you to continue the work that you're doing. I will bring you back again after you publishing another book.
Is that a promise?
Yeah.
It's okay. I always get worried. I'm like, he's interviewing like another nuclear engineer. Don't bother him. He's doing something important.
We'll let you know for sure.
Right.
Thank you again for your time and sharing your work to my audience.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Sai.
Take care.
All right, take care.